Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the Property and Local Tax Division to order at this time. We have a number of TIF bills before us today. Our page has asked that as testifiers come forward, thumbs up from the page, you know you're doing a good job, that people do remember to sign in. We do ask testifiers always to identify themselves by name when they begin their testimony for the record. We also ask them to sign in, and the good news is it all goes over to the State Historical Society, and your grandchildren can look up this day when Grandma or Grandpa came and testified before the Minnesota House. How's that for cool? Okay, getting some thumbs up from the witnesses as well. You know this is going to be a good afternoon. I'm also going to ask that to the extent possible, which I hope is significant, that authors keep their presentations to no more than about 10 minutes. I want every bill, author, and testifier to have the chance to tell their story, but I want the folks behind you in line to also have the chance to tell their story. At this time, Representative Nelson, would you be so good as to move the Tuesday, March 11th, 2014 minutes after you've completed reading them?
I've read them thoroughly, Mr. Chair, and I will move that we approve the minutes as written for March 11, 2014.
Thank you very much. Members, you've heard the motion. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much. We are going to start today with a presentation from the Economic Development Association of Minnesota. And my script here indicates Mr. Matt Brown and Mr. Aaron Backman. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for coming today.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Brown. I work in economic development for the city of Coon Rapids, and I'm here today on behalf of the Economic Development Association of Minnesota. And my colleague, Aaron Backman, is also joining me from the city of Windham. A number of us from the organization have spent the day here and had the pleasure of meeting with many of you and your colleagues and talking about some specific local economic development projects and also current and future state legislation. We wanted to talk a little bit today about tax increment financing, since that's an important component of EDEM's platform, and I believe some material was included in your packet related to that. Overall, TIF has been an important local economic development tool, something that's been used in urban, suburban, and rural areas around the state for important development projects, projects that involve significant job creation, redevelopment of lighted properties, and many of those projects are very important to the local economies of communities around the state. I know today you're considering a few different pieces of special legislation that relate to TIF projects in individual cities around the state. And a few of those, I noticed, relate to what is known as the five-year rule, or that is that five-year window during which activities must occur after a TIF district is certified. And EDEM is supportive of increasing that five-year window to 8 years, and I understand that there's some likelihood that there will be legislation this session for that. And that's something that not only is supported by EDEM, but also metro cities. And I know from my experience in Coon Rapids, in the past, there have been development projects that became more complicated and simply took a little bit more time to complete, and I know we've had special legislation passed to address those specifically, and since it's something that arises fairly frequently, I think a blanket increase in that window is something that is very important for a variety of communities around the state. Thank you, and I'll turn things over to Aaron.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Property and Local Tax Committee, my name is Aaron Backman. I'm the economic development person for the city of Windham. I've been working with ED at the local level for the past 20 years. And I've dealt with both large projects, as Joel can attest to, the Medtronic project in Moundsview, and lots of small ones. I would strongly encourage this committee to support legislation when it comes to extend the five-year TIF rule to require development activity to be finished in 5 years to a period that's longer or at least 8 years. In response to the recession, as you know, the five-year rule was extended temporarily to 10 years until 2009. Economic challenges remain in the economy, and I think 5 years is frankly not long enough to complete the development activity in many economic development and redevelopment TIF districts. It's interesting, out of the eight bills you're going to be considering this afternoon, three of them are dealing with the five-year rule. In the case of Windham in southwest Minnesota, there have been several ED districts that the development, frankly, took longer than 5 years. Balancing the concerns of surplus increment and getting properties back on the tax rolls with the realities of development projects, I think Edom Government Affairs Committee would strongly suggest extending the rule from 5 years to at least 8 years for all districts, understanding, of course, that individual cities, such as you'll be hearing later on, may need to go longer, 10 years, et cetera. And with that, that's my comments for today. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Any questions from members to either Mr. Brown or Mr. Backman? 7 minutes. Rock on. Good. Thank you very much. Representative Hertas, you have a testifier from a distance and who's got a schedule. Would you please come forward? Good afternoon, Representative Hertas. Would you like to move House File 2580 be before the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus division report?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I would.
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, here is a situation that you just saw a preview or overline of what's been happening with our economic slowdown that we had. Even my own personal experience with regard to development, I think with the slowdown in the economy and some of the comps and the comparables in the appraisal market have destroyed a lot of opportunities to get the comparables that it really needs to support construction, new construction, and a lot of these development projects really are taking longer now than they were anticipated when they were started. So in the interest of saving time, this is things that we did last year. We got several of these here again, and pretty much the reason for the requested extension is the slowdown of the economy and lack of things happening for a period of time, but things are back on track. I have Mayor Mark Hannis here from the City of Mound, would offer a few comments, and turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you.
Mayor, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mark Hannis. I am the mayor in the City of Mound. I learned a long time ago that brevity is oftentimes more effective than gobs of unnecessary data.
So, and you still got elected to office.
Yeah. This is going to be fast. Okay. First of all, our original TIF district was established and certified in May of 2005. We did get an extension in 2009, again, for the same thing that was stated earlier due to the economic downturn. We are seeking another five-year extension to that. Mound is in a unique position, I think somewhat unique, in that we don't have a major highway, a state highway running through our town. We have an intersection of two county roads, and that establishes our downtown. We're about 6 miles either direction to get to a state highway. That makes it very difficult to attract businesses because a lot of corporate models require that you're on a larger highway than we have. It's not undefeatable, but it's difficult. We've been making steady progress through these years, and the two boards in front of me, the one on your left is a photo taken of our downtown in 1997. The one on your right was taken in 2010. So you can see there's been a lot of changes, but the TIF district, which is fairly small in downtown Mound, is still vacant land. It's still bare, and it's a difficult area to get over. Yet market studies, we did a market study last year, and those still indicate a very viable downtown district for us and encourage that we continue to pursue that direction. The market is improving a little bit, but as has been stated before, it's still slow, as it is for everyone else. That, coupled with our difficult location, continues to cause a major drag on our progress. Without this extension, we could lose $35 million in increment. That's a pretty significant deal for us, and that's under a current developer's agreement. In addition, several years ago, Mound sold a $4 million bond to completely remove a dump along the waterway and sanitize that dump, take out the bad stuff, put the sanitized earth back in. So we've spent a significant amount of money to prep that area for our downtown redevelopment. Without this extension, we'll never have an opportunity to recover that increment to pay for that debt service. So, again, that's a large deal for us. So for a small town of just over 9,000 people, this is a huge issue for us, and it's vital to our town's economic security and our future fiscal health. So that's essentially what I've got as a brief overview, and we're standing for questions.
Questions from members. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify regarding House File 2580? Representative Hertas, any closing statement?
Closing statement is I hope we can do as well as we did last night.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
At this time, Representative Isaacson. Reverend Mahoney, would you like to move House File 2013 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the division report?
Yes, Mr. Chair, so moved.
Thank you very much. Representative Isaacson, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, committee, I really appreciate a few moments of your time. This has been a long process for me, starting back in the summer, and I'll tell you that I've been at boot camp on what TIFs are and how they work and all that kind of stuff, and I've had a lot of animated conversations with Chair Lincheski, in which I've learned a whole lot, and so I'm pleased to say that we have a bill before you. I believe it's 2013. However, this isn't the final product, and in my continuing efforts to try to make something that people are going to be happy with that also still accomplishes what I need for one of my cities in my district, we have an amendment we're working on that's going to get us there, so I want to just use this as a moment maybe to set the table for you when you hear that amendment, as I believe it'll come back to this committee when the time comes. And so I have with me the mayor of Shoreview, Sandy, and we're going to talk just a little bit about what we have going on, but I want to start off by saying that the reason why I'm excited and willing to go to the mat for Shoreview is because of what I've seen Shoreview do in terms of the way it manages its personal money, the way it manages its taxes, the way it manages its relationships with local businesses. To me, has been the exemplary example of how I would hope all cities manage that. And because of that, I feel like it's important that as a legislator who represents that area, it's my job to reward and go to bat for those folks that are doing it right. And I think beyond a shadow of a doubt, if you took a look at the inner workings of the city of Shoreview, you would see this is a city that's setting the example on how to manage money responsibly, promote business, and keep a really healthy and happy populace going. So I'm going to turn over to the mayor here. Sandy, go
Thank
ahead.
You.
Introduce yourself.
Thank you.
Mayor, good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I am Sandy Martin. I'm the mayor of Shoreview, and I've served in that capacity for 19 years. Chair Dabney and members of the committee, I'm very pleased to be able to be here today and to talk to you a little bit about precisely what Representative Isaacson was talking about. Shoreview has, I think we're going to talk about something today that we're going to have 100% agreement on, and that is job creation and economic development. And we've had a pretty successful track record in Shoreview, especially the last few years in that realm. For a city of 27,000 people, almost fully developed, we recognized a couple of years ago that we probably weren't going to attract new corporate tenants to our city because we are almost fully developed. Instead, we developed a business and retention and expansion program where we went out and met with our key landmark businesses. Shoreview has some phenomenal businesses, high-tech, global companies. They could pretty much go wherever they wanted in the world. And they've chosen Shoreview. they represent a huge number of employees at the same time. So we felt it was important to meet with them. We went out as a team, myself included, council members sometimes, Economic Development Commission members, staff people. We asked to meet with their CEOs and their top management. And we've made 24 of those visits in the last 2 years, sitting down with the top management people of our key businesses in Shoreview. And what's phenomenal, I think, is that we just ask questions. We ask them what challenges they were facing in this new economy. We ask them how business was going. We ask them if there was a way that Shoreview could partner with them to help them to even be more successful. And they were kind of amazed by that. Government hadn't come to them before and asked, what can we do to help you be successful? So it developed, not only did we learn a great deal about their businesses, but we also developed first name relationships with the top personnel at each of those companies. And just a little anecdote, this just came to me by email day before yesterday. I've got a son that's a professor at the University of Wisconsin in Green Bay. He's got a friend who lives in Stevens Point. His friend was in Long Beach, California at an aerospace and defense manufacturers summit conference. One of the present presenters was a business from Shoreview, Par Systems. And so he wanted to engage him in conversation and said, well, do you happen to know your mayor? She's the mother of a friend of mine. Well, they spent the next 20 minutes expounding on their relationship with Shoreview, how we have facilitated their development and their growth and their expansion and their ability to hire new people. So this thing goes around, you know. It goes all the way to California, and then it comes back to Green Bay, mm-hmm. and it comes to Shoreview.
Right.
And it really speaks to what we've been doing. But specifically, I just want to tell you about two examples. And one is TSI. And TSI is a global company that designs and produces precision measurement instruments in the areas of air quality. They employ 560 people worldwide and 440 highly skilled employees in Shoreview. And in 2012, they had intentions of expanding. They had some issues with meeting stormwater guidelines because their expansion was going to take most of their parking lot and most of the area. The city facilitated the creation of a huge holding pond at the base of their underneath their parking lot so that they could add on and pretty much double their size and add an additional 180 to 200 employees. So for our $1 million public investment using our TIF proceeds, it brought over $7 million in private investment, adding a projected $12.5 million to their market value. And I think those numbers are really significant. We also facilitated their approval process, which helped them to do a process, their construction quickly. In the case of Par Systems, excuse me, they're a world leader in robotics technology. They're headquartered in Shoreview with over 200 employees, and they have nearly 500 at multiple locations worldwide. They are truly a company that could leave Shoreview, they could leave Minnesota, and they could go to another country to operate. But they've chosen to stay here, and we were able to facilitate that to help with their growth. They needed a new facility because the part of their company, a piece of it, was purchased by Westinghouse. So they needed a new facility. We found two empty buildings that were not on the tax rolls. We helped facilitate the acquisition of two buildings. They now have a campus in Shoreview. They did a $5.5 million expansion in exchange for $600,000 in city public investment. So, again, an additional 40 high-tech jobs came to our community. So those are a couple of the prime examples, and we have a couple that are coming up in the wings, but without the TIF proceeds, we have no economic development tools. There simply are none for a city like Shoreview, And the only way we've been able to facilitate the work that we've done has been with the TIF proceeds from a pre-1990 district.
I want to table on something real quick, Madam Mayor. When we first put this bill together, I'm gonna maybe play a little bit of my freshman card right now, and I know it's getting really worn out, but I'm gonna give it one more shot here. I'm often of the belief that you shoot for the moon and get everything you want or ask for. You ask for it, and then it gets more realistic as you talk to folks in committee or spend half an hour in Chair Lincheski's office. And so what I've learned about this is that I think we don't have the kind of tool we need to be successful in the way that we want to, but I'm also not sure now that the original way I wrote the TIF bill gets us where we want to go, nor do I think it's something that many folks have an appetite for in terms of setting a precedent. And so I kind of set the table for you that you kind of see what Shoreview's about. You see that we're in the process of learning and wanting to do it right. At the same time, we need to reward a city that's doing it right by business and providing strong economic base as part of the Minnesota economy. And so that's kind of lead me up to where we get to this DEOL and looking at some alternative approaches to finding ways to maybe be able to use some of that money but not extend that particular TIF and another possibility of how we might help Shoreview find a way to expand and put another tool in its toolbox to be successful, especially with the track record of success that you've had. So, but I don't know if you want to.
No, and I was simply going to describe, we have Westinghouse is located in Shoreview, and they're, again, a PAR program, and they need to expand. They need help with acquisition. They need help with parking. They're in a fairly old industrial area, and so that's one of them. We have Land O'Lakes. We have some big issues coming up that we need to be able to be flexible and nimble in working with our businesses, and the only way we can do that is if we have a financial tool that we can use. So I really thank you for your consideration and for listening to this. I think we do have a great track record, and go ahead.
I was going to say that Westinghouse is the company right now that's building the crane that's going to clean up Fukushima, and a lot of that work's being done out of the headquarters we're talking about and other facilities around. But it kind of gives you a global perspective of how in our little hamlet, as I like to call it, we've got a lot of world industry leaders, and I think that's something we'd like to make sure we keep around and make it for positive for our economy here in Shoreview.
All right, Representative Isaacson, you have another testifier. Do you wish to comment, or are you there as moral support?
All right.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Is there anyone else in the audience wishing to testify regarding House File 2013? Representative Isaacson, any last comments?
I really appreciate your time, and I want you to know that I'm going to continue to do my homework and try to get this right for you guys. So when we come back, we're not wasting your time. I appreciate
Excellent.
It. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you very much. Oh, Representative Carlson. Pardon.
You know, he said he wanted to play his freshman card. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that I ever played my freshman card.
It's been I don't firmly think we have in your back pocket for how long?
I was going to say, Mr. Chairman, mm-hmm. Do I still have it in the bank?
I trust you do. You might have a couple other cards there as well, I suspect.
Representative,
and Mr. Chairman, I hope it's sitting in the bank that hasn't been collecting interest. Cause it's going to be a lot of money.
All right. Nope. So, working through and looking around, Representative Mahoney, are you able to go at this time, sir?
Always ready, sir.
I'm sorry. Oh, thank you. I missed that. I'm sorry.
If you'd like.
Yeah.
I should have caught.
How many are sitting here? Chair, committee members, I would like to move House File 2450 for possible inclusion in the division report.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Please proceed.
Chair, committee members, what we are doing with 2450 is we're rearranging the TIF and what we're using the TIF for. We are not changing. What we're doing is buying old debt back and getting new debt so that the interest rate will be lower. I brought lobbyists from the city of St. Paul and Pardon?
Budget director.
You know, you can't see or do math. I can't hear. You know.
But we're a heck of a team together, Representative Mahoney, aren't we?
So with that, Mr. Chair and committee members, I would I couldn't hear anything there over there.
No, it's just
but
as well.
I will get even.
Yes.
I'd like to ask J.D. Burton to explain the bill and hopefully get it put into the division report.
Very good. Mr. Burton, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is J.D. Burton. I am with Government Relations with the City of St. Paul. Thank you very much for the opportunity. As Representative Mahoney testified, that this bill deals with the city's event district, TIF district, which includes such things as the River Center, Roy Wilkins, XL Energy, et cetera. In 2008, the legislature extended the authorization of this TIF district until 2023. At that same time, they tied the increment that's generated by the district to pay off convention center bonds that were taken out in 1996. Fast forward to 2012, another revenue source was provided by the legislature of about $2.7 million that lasts until 2032. The city intends to use to refinance the 1996 bonds, convention center bonds this year, and use that $2.7 million to pay off the debt service and of these bonds. Because the city is going to be using the $2.7 million for those bonds, it's asking for the legislator's authority to use the increment that's generated from the TIF to help pay off another set of bonds that were taken out in 2009 for the same facility. And providing the authority to do that is what this bill actually does. Specifically, we're asking the legislature to strike the reference to the 1996 bonds that's currently in law and change it to 2009 bonds. This will allow us to redirect that TIF increment from paying off the 96 bonds to paying off the 2009 bonds. We are not asking for an extension of the district. We are not asking to change the boundaries. And we are not asking to spend the increment on anything that's outside of the current facility. Further, this has no change at all on any other local jurisdictions. It only affects these specific bonds, so it doesn't address the county and doesn't touch the school district. We're simply asking for the permission to spend this increment on a different set of bonds that were taken out for the same facility. That's a brief explanation. We brought along Scott Cordes, who's our budget director, if there are any specific questions that we can't field. But we thank you for the opportunity, and we stand for any questions.
Representative Mahoney, is the Dorothy Day Center in this district as well?
I don't think so, is it?
Sir, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and
proceed. Mr. Chair, Scott Cordes, budget director, City of St. Paul. I'm actually not sure. We'd have to look into that and get back to you.
I assume that if it's not, you could see it, the TIF district from there, like across the street or something. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, yes.
If
it's not in it, you can see it, or you have to walk by it.
Yeah.
And these dollars will do this, and I made sure with the city, is that just like with the Target Center having to be remodeled, mm-hmm. this is part of that particular remodeling of the X. And what that's and our whole entire entertainment center down there.
Mm-hmm. All right,
that's where that money's going to go.
Questions from members. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mr. Michael, if I might.
Certainly.
On this one, I'm wondering. So, if I'm hearing this correctly, it's just a surplus increment issue. That what they wanted to do is going to the timing is going to keep running, and they're still going to have more money. And so they're trying to move it to a new location for a different set of debt. Is that something that the current statute allows surplus increment to be spent on? Or would this not be called surplus increment because once they hit their first goal, they're supposed to decertify?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lincheski, this district is a very unusual district in that it, along with the district in Minneapolis and I believe South St. Paul, were essentially originally pre-79 districts that the legislature allowed to be recertified as new TIF districts. But I know you can see your eyes widening. But
the folks in the back of the room can see your eyes widening.
But the taxes that are generated by the county and the school do not generate increment. But what's happened here is, at the time that this law was enacted, similarly the Minneapolis and South St. Paul laws, the legislature took to specifying exactly what they could use that increment for. And as the testifiers have indicated, last session the legislature gave the city some other money to spend for that same purpose, and so now they're back to saying, well, can't we redirect that money for some other purpose? But in terms of thinking about tax increment, this is much closer to a city property tax levy than, or abatement. It's really more analogous to abatement. And so it doesn't raise, as the testifiers were indicating, it doesn't raise the issues about, gee, is the county's tax base being taken away for some other purpose, because they, the city's actually transmitting each year to the county their taxes from this property, which is what makes it, you know, one of these three very unique TIF districts.
Representative Lynchester.
So, Mr. Chair, just a follow-up. So, Mr. Michael, is this is similar, a city-only TIF, really, like the NRP when the pre-1990s were converted to a city-only in Minneapolis?
Mr. Michael.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions from members regarding House File 2450? Is there anyone in the audience wishing to testify regarding House File 2450? Seeing none, Representative Mahoney, any closing comments?
Just for the freshmen, briefly, no.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Earhart, House File 27, the chair will move House File 2727 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the division report. They just gave me those. Good afternoon, Representative Earhart.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. House File 2727 is an effort on the part of the city of Medina to get some affordable housing or workforce housing into some areas that that are very suitable for us. In the Southdale area, and land prices in that in most of Atlanta exclude private development for workforce housing, and some of the rest of us too. You can get that one.
All right.
That's what this is about, and we're trying to use tax increment financing, and so I will let the experts describe the specifics. And I have Bill Neuendorf, the development officer person for the city of Medina, with me on the right.
Mr. Neuendorf. Great. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Bill Neuendorf. I'm the City of Edina's Economic Development Manager, and thanks for the opportunity to be heard this afternoon. Our request this session is to ask for additional flexibility in the use of tax increment financing in the region of the Southdale Mall. In 2012, the city created the Southdale 2 TIF district. That was one of the special economic development districts that was created as part of the jobs bill and the legislation from 2010. The initial intention was to stimulate reinvestment in construction jobs and new investment at the Southdale Mall property. So the city entered into an agreement with Simon Property, who owns the mall, and we were able to encourage them to do more than just a small paint job, but to make a multi-million dollar investment into that center for the benefit of the community. With the economic development district, one of the limitations in it is that the window of opportunity is closed to incentivize additional development in the area. In the last few years, we've talked with several developers who are interested in improving some of the lower rate properties in the area. There are a handful of buildings, in fact, more than a handful, a few handfuls of buildings that were built at about the same time as Southdale Mall, which was more than 60 years ago. Several of those buildings are underutilized. They're considered Class C space. There's some retail spaces that are difficult to lease, but yet there's a land value associated with them. What we're hoping to do is allow the special legislation to move forward that would reopen the window of opportunity so that the city could see if we could work with the developer to take some of these properties that are being discussed and actually get them into properties that are redeveloped and reinvested in. So far, the two projects that show the greatest promise are both housing projects. One is located at France Avenue, just to the northwest of the shopping center. A developer has assembled the property, started with that project as far as being entitled, but yet the project has stalled, partially because the city council imposed an affordable housing mandate on the property that the developer could accept including some workforce housing in the project, but his stipulation was find a way for me to pay for it to make my project pencil out. And at this point, his property is in the TIF district, but we don't have the tool to actually allow us to help make his project reality. So the request is twofold. One, to reopen the window of opportunity up until 2016 or 2017 for housing projects, and then also to extend the term of the district from its current 8-year life. We're asking for an additional 5 years, which would result in this district closing in 2026 rather than 2021, which it is currently scheduled for. That's the overview. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Neuendorf. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm just a little confused. I'm just reading quickly your legislative talking points, and it sounds like you're still in the process of evaluating what would be this exact housing, but the range of affordable units at 60% of median income would be 10 to 40%. So what are you expecting to have the majority of the rental housing in these developments to be? Are they going to be high-end, which is typical of your community? You're calling it workplace, but it looks like the majority of it isn't actually targeted at that lower-end worker.
Mr. Neuendorf, Mr. Chair and Representative, in the last few years, at least two projects have been built in that area, and they are luxury high-end apartment living. The city did not have the opportunity to include any affordably priced units in those. The current strategy from the city is to have a percentage of each new project include some units that are affordably priced. So we'd be targeting more of the 60% of the AMI, and currently the council has been talking about 10% of all units in a project, up to 20% of all units. And it really depends on the project and the size of it and the scale of it. But that's our strategy, is rather than have one large project that's all subsidized housing, we'd spread it out and have 10 to 20% in each new development, and we would be targeting the 60% AMI range.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you. I think we just, a number of these bills are bringing up the issue of who should we be subsidizing, what population, and what kind of level could look. I appreciate the fact that you've given us some good information, including the expected over $100,000 per unit subsidy to make this work, and that's a pretty steep subsidy. So I appreciate your giving us what you're thinking about as you're planning this.
Other questions from committee members? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify regarding House File 2727? Seeing no one, Representative Earhart, any closing comment?
Well, there are a lot of units of government that have been after us for workforce housing out there, including the Mid-Council, but if it's got to be subsidized, it can only go so far, and that's what we're up to now. And there are some workforce housing that has been subsidized by the city itself over time, and now we need more, and so we're raising the density strongly in the Southdale area with a number of.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just thinking, I'm trying to see in my mind's eye where you're talking about. So are you talking between the mall and the hospital? Where are you saying is northwest?
I assume that's a question for Mr. Neuendorf?
Yes.
Sure.
Sir.
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, there's two sites. One is at 6500 France, so directly west of Fairview Southdale Hospital. Just south of the cross. West of the hospital and immediately south of the parking ramp. Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
The second property is on York Avenue, directly east of the mall, next to the Cub Foods, if you're familiar with the area. Those are the two ripest projects. Hopefully there'll be more, but those two are, we could see progress there in 2015 if this is successful.
So just down the street from the Noodles and Company and across the...
Yes. We'll meet you there.
All right, sounds good. Anyone else? With that, thank you, Mr. Neuendorf. Thank you, Representative Earhart.
Thank you.
Representative Mason. Representative Loeffler, would you like to move House File 1905 to be before the Committee for Possible Inclusion in the Division Report?
Mr. Chair, I'd be glad to bring it forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Mason?
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Sandra Mason, and I appreciate the opportunity to present House File 1905, and we are requesting some considerations for the Enigan TIF District. And I'd like to give you just a short history. Cedarvale was a primary shopping and business district of Enigan for many years. When Highway 77 or the Cedar Avenue Bridge went through, the main access to this district was totally cut off, and the businesses never recovered from that.
Thank you.
And while I was on the city council, the city worked very hard with the local businesses, with the chamber, et cetera, to come up with programs to try to help that situation. We did new signage, we did landscaping, et cetera, but nothing was overly successful. So around 2000, the city took a more dramatic action, and I'll let the testifiers give you a little background about the details that brings us to the table today.
Mr. Mayor, welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity before you, members of the committee. I appreciate your time as well. Excuse me. I'm Mike McGuire, and I'm the mayor of the city of Enigan. And I thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about House File 1905. Authored by Representative Mason. I also want to thank her for her work in the district on behalf of property taxpayers, as well as all of you for your participation on this committee in that pursuit. I want to take the opportunity today to briefly give you some background, or extend a little bit on the background that Representative Mason offered, explain what the provisions of House File 1905 are and what they mean to the city of Enigan, summarize why we feel it's necessary for property taxpayers in Enigan to seek this consideration, and then finally explain why I think Egan's approach to TIF and redevelopment in the Cedar Grove area justifies the request and your consideration. I'm also joined today by our City Finance Director, Tom Pepper, and if you have any questions that actually involve numbers, he'll be available to be able to answer those. As Representative Mason suggested, the Cedar Grove area was once a vibrant, almost downtown area of our community. It was a gathering place, and the changes in Highway 77 impacted the area and the businesses dramatically. If you're familiar with the Disney movie Cars, I liken what happened in Cedar Grove to what happened in Radiator Springs as well. It had a really deleterious effect on that area. We did engage and began and certified a TIF district to redevelop about 207 acres in 2002. We had done that based on some community input and about a two-year-long process, working with residents of the area to determine how we're going to most successfully revitalize it. We came out with a vision of revitalization of the area that included mixed uses, pedestrian scale, taking advantage of coming transit, which is now online in the form of the Red Line on the bus rapid transit. We wanted it to be human scale and walkable with a mix of residential, commercial, office and retail uses. We also were insistent that the development had to be market supportable, i.e. we were focused on trying to bring private investment in and being able to refinance and build our increment based on private investment. The plan was one that I think was well conceived. When we certified the district, 57% of the buildings were structurally substandard. The city moved about the business after it certified the district of assembling and acquiring some 80 separate properties. That was a long process that involved a fair amount of litigation. At the end of the day, the city of Eagan was deemed correct and appropriate in the way that it assembled this property. We invested in infrastructure, in rerouting roads, in trails, in gas pipe relocations, and other infrastructure, and we prepared the site for a comprehensive redevelopment, creating a blank canvas. To date, $62.4 million worth of public investment has been is in that ground. We have been able to generate a significant amount of public investment to date, of private investment to date, that in the neighborhood of $117.6 million in private investment. Even still, with those successes, there remains to be a $20 million funding gap in the TIF district that when it runs out, as we project, we worry will be on our City of Eagan property taxpayers. So House File 1905 proposes to address the funding gap and ensure the city's continued ability to be an active and strategic partner in this vitally important redevelopment by, number one, extending the overall term of the TIF district by 15 years, number two, unfreezing the tax rate, and number three, extending the five-year rule on additional an additional 5 years, and that's the five-year rule on investments. The bottom line, and I'll save you some of the more dramatic but well-written testimony. I think we had a very good strategic plan. One of the things that is, I think, laudable for the City of Eagan and my colleagues in the City Council, maybe not so much me, is the patience that we've displayed in sticking to that vision and sticking to the market-supported necessity of that plan. Our challenge, of course, was that there was a small matter of a little recession where the bottom fell out of every market that our redevelopment plan was invested in. It fell out of office, it fell out of retail, it fell out of residential. We stayed true to the plan, but the recession was essentially a large pause button, and it threw off all of our calculations and estimates because we're left holding this front-end investment and not being able to collect increment on it. We have in past years, as the recession has passed and growth has started to return, I think been rewarded for that patience because we've seen great successes in just the last 2 years. Less than a year ago, we broke ground on a $100 million investment in a 400,000 square foot premium outlet mall that will open on August 14th of this year. And that was less than a year ago that we broke ground. That precipitated a development proposal for 186 units of rental apartments, accompanied with, again, in that mixed-use spirit, 13,000 square feet, or 11,000 square feet, I'm sorry, of commercial use. The city has invested in a parking structure so that we can stack parking as a public amenity and be able to work with and save footprint and preserve TIF revenue opportunities. And we've been able to get partners in that from both the outlet mall developers as well as a newly approved purchase agreement that still has to go through the approval processes for a hotel. So in the last year, the district has really taken off and moved well. And looks outwardly like a big success. And we're very, very pleased with its performance. And we think its performance validates the strategic plan that we had going in and our commitment to it through some very, very tough times. Even still with those successes, we still find this $20 million gap. We also find that there is still more redevelopment to do. Most of this activity has taken place in the core of the district, and it is a 207 square foot 200 square, whatever the mileage is, square foot I think it is, acre, I'm sorry, 200 square foot, sorry, an acre. So there's still a lot that remains to be done, and we are up on that five-year investment. So, for example, where we take on as a public the investment to put in a public a parking infrastructure that stacks parking and preserves developable and revenue square footage. In the future, if we have those same opportunities in other parts of the district that still remain to be redeveloped, our hands are tied in terms of being able to put those investments in without this extension of the five-year rule. So I ask that you, I appreciate your time in considering this measure. I stand open to any questions, and I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did the staff want to testify as well before I ask questions? Or?
I'm here to answer questions.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, thank you. My questions are for the two testifiers up there. In Representative Mason's original comments, she discussed that the Cedar Grove plot, I think the term she used was run down, and it was caused because of a lack of access. So those statements that you would agree with?
That I agree with?
Mr. Mayor?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but I'm very serious. I have an 11-year-old, and if you've seen the movie Cars, there's a scene in there where there's a discussion of the highway being routed around town. And every time I see that movie and see the scene where that discussion is there and hear the song from James Taylor that laments it, I'm reminded of exactly what happened in Cedar Grove. This was a vital area. It came complete with a market, with a Ben Franklin, and it was where people gathered. And it was a vital area to our community. And when Highway, you got to keep in mind that it fronted Highway 13, which then was the major route for access from the South Metro into St. Paul. When Highway 77 came in and literally took all that traffic away from those storefronts, those storefronts took a tank.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Garofalo.
First off, Mr. Mayor, it's good to see you again. I should have said hi before I started questioning
it's,
you.
It's good to see you again.
So this property, dilapidated businesses, unsuccessful businesses. Why did the city have to use eminent domain to acquire the properties?
Mayor McGuire?
Mr. Chair, I'll respond and suggest that I have a very good friend who's also a mayor in the city of Bloomington. And he has suggested to me that no city ever got a good deal on a piece of property, no matter how run down and blighted. And as I suggested, 57% of the properties in the buildings were substandard. Whenever you go into a redevelopment and you have to assemble those properties, anybody who has a piece of property, no matter how run down it is, they insist that the property is nowhere near as run down as you do. And is worth far more than you think they do. So in many cases, we had to go through eminent domain process simply to get a fair negotiation over what the price was going to be. In many cases, we still had to overpay what the market would actually bear were these to be private transactions. But government is perceived to have deep pockets. And we tried to be as conservative as we could, but you still get into conflicts with private property owners, and when you have 80 parcels, those are always challenges. Some of those eminent domain processes, quite frankly, with the Cedarvale Mall in particular, were friendly processes, where for tax purposes, they actually sought a friendly eminent domain process because it served them more amicably. So not all of them are contentious, but there is a purpose to having the eminent domain and having an arbitrary third party or an objective third party negotiate when there are differences over values. And in this context, there's always going to be difference of opinion over values because of the perceptions of how much money is actually on the table.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Mayor, well, first of all, I would take exception with the fact that when the power of government is used to seize private property from successful business owners, that is a independent third-party operator. I asked when Representative Mason made her comment, I even asked a follow-up comment to say, were these dilapidated buildings or unsuccessful businesses? And you confirmed that. The fact of the matter is they were successful businesses in that area. Owners of those businesses who happened to reside in my district that I was familiar with. They didn't want to sell. The thing was, their business was not the preferred business the city of Eagan liked. They didn't like the business. They didn't like these messy auto repair stores, auto repair locations that were fixing people's automobiles. So access to the facility was not a problem. It wasn't a matter of whether the businesses were failing or not. I will grant you that the I used to go to the mini golf course there. What's that place that used to be there? In the mall. What was it called?
It was in Cedarvale Mall.
No, but like the batting cages and stuff.
It was Sports USA or something like that, I think. No. I forget it.
It was like an indoor...
All-American Entertainment.
Yeah, they moved.
Representative Garofalo, is this a substantive point?
Yeah, it actually is. They're in Burnsville now. They moved. But the point is that access to transportation was not a problem. There were successful businesses there, and the city of Eagan made a choice that they had preferred businesses that they thought would benefit the community. And people who had put their life savings and their work into their businesses were forced out. They were forced to close their businesses because government knew better. And I want to make sure that we have some nice handouts here from the city, and I think this is probably the third time that this TIF extension has been, at least that I've seen it before. And it's not a criticism of you. I mean this in a positive way. I really do wish you were in the Senate right now.
I mean, well, of that I have no doubt, Representative.
You're a good guy, but I mean, I just think it's important for the committee and people to understand that regardless of the best of intentions, that's what happened. You guys took someone's business away from them.
Mayor McGuire.
Chair, and I appreciate the comments, Representative Garofalo, and you know, and we can always discuss these things offline as well. You know, when I first came on the city council, and I wasn't on the city council or the mayor when this district was certified, and when, quite frankly, the plan was developed. I'm proud of the plan. I'm committed to the plan, and I'm not trying to diss myself from it. But to be clear. But when I first came on the council, one of the things that was suggested to me is there are a couple of rules of redevelopment. And this is Eagan's first major redevelopment. And that is that redevelopment is hard. The second one is that redevelopment is really difficult. And the third one is that you don't know what to do, you should refer to rules 1 and 2. These things are messy. And when there are 80 parcels, they're that much messier. The fact of the matter is that a significant portion of the businesses in the district felt as though the district needed revitalization. There was a community engaged process asking, what does that revitalization look like? In that context, there are going to be some people who perceive themselves to be winners and others who perceive themselves to be losers. It is a difficult thing. It puts strain on a community and on its connections to each other. I fully understand that. In the case of auto repair, one of the things I'd like to suggest to you, Representative Garofalo, is that there were more than one auto repair business in the Cedar Grove area when we began this. And the city was successful and relocated successfully within the community at least two that I can name off the top of my head. Now, there were others that we were not as successful with. That doesn't mean we wouldn't have liked to have been successful with, but we tried to work with every business owner as best we could to pursue the best interests of both the business owner as well as the community in the redevelopment and revitalization of the district. Some people disagree with how things go along the way. There are some elbows. There are some tense words. I understand that. I can appreciate that. But I don't think it represents the total picture of the whole. And I think it's wrong for us to try to reduce the complexity of it to small anecdotal information without looking at the entire context. So I appreciate your comments, Representative Garofalo, and I ask that you just consider the larger context.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Mayor, and again, we're having a hearing on TIF here. It's not on eminent domain, but I can't... This is not a matter of anecdote or of a separate hearing. Not you personally, because you weren't mayor, but the city of Eagan used the power of government to shut down a successful business that the owner was unable to build elsewhere because of the high capital costs. That is not an appropriate use of government. Now, I'll grant you that the timing of the recession kind of made it look doubly stupid because then the redevelopment didn't take place, and there's certainly problems with that. But I would just say to members that there's an appropriate and an inappropriate use of government power, and I just do not understand sometimes what units of government are thinking. My last question is going to be this. So we said the primary problem for this was that a lack of access because of Highway 77. So for single occupancy vehicles, is there new access to this corridor now from Highway 77?
Mayor McGuire or Representative Mason, you look.
Well, a couple of things have happened. One of the things that took place somewhere around 2000 is they did upgrade the road system, so there is now a nice entryway at Silver Belt and 13. And one of the donut store used to be there. That was one of the first stores that went. But they have upgraded the area. It is better. It is easier. Do I think the access is still great? No. And you're going to see some other proposals coming forward for this new development. But I still do want to argue the fact that I think the access and the fact that what happened when 77 opened really did do a disservice to that area. And I think you're kind of overstating the issue about how bad the build. There were some businesses that just never really recovered. If you went into Cedar Vale, there were always empty places. There were some businesses that managed to stay afloat, and as you said, I mean, they were impacted by the whole district as well, which was unfortunate. But yet, overall, the businesses were still not doing as well as they could have, or as I recall what it was like when I first moved to Eagan.
And if I could add, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Mayor.
One of the big differences is part of the challenge with the Cedar Grove area when the change in access came about was its almost exclusive investment at the time in retail, and in retail that was really quite spread out. So one of the things that is different today about the plan and about the development that's going on there right now is that it is much more intense development. There is market shed in residential that is actually built into the area that wasn't there before. So it's the mix of uses that I think has an improvement effect on the business climate for business that is still in the area. It's not solely the access, because in the redevelopment we're essentially recalibrating that mix of uses.
Right. Mr. Chairman. Other questions from other members?
Final question, Mr. Chairman. It's the last one. It's the last one.
I thought the last one was the last one.
I didn't say that. You did.
Yeah. No, you did.
Did I?
Yeah, you did. Right. You said my last question then.
Okay. So. This will be my last one. I'm sorry.
All right. The last one. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do appreciate it. And again, this is a, while I don't represent the city of Eagan, it's one that is, it's very important to people that I represented it, and it's a sore spot with me, obviously. But I want to say, I wish we had more mayors like you, Mayor McGuire. You're a good guy. You and I know each other, so maybe I was a little bit tougher on you today than I should have been. But I would
expect no less, Representative Graff.
Yeah. And but I would point out that the primary reason given for the problem of this property was lack of access from Highway 77 from Cedar Avenue. There is no new access from Highway 77 for single occupancy vehicles. There's a bus depot there, but the exact same problem is there. And we have taken people's property. We did it back. You guys did it back in 2005. Is that the right time? 2005, 2006?
Mr. Mayor?
It sounds about right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been 8 years, and now we have another extension. So that's just my commentary. Mr. Chairman, I really appreciate
it. I thought that was going to be a question, Representative.
No, it was.
Yes.
Because they nodded.
Five or six. Okay.
So there's no new access from 77. So I do appreciate it, and I hope the committee considers that in their deliberations.
All right.
Thank you.
Representative Helpson, good afternoon. So nice of you to join us.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. And thank you for having me here. I am here to lend support to this request. And although it is not in my district, it certainly impacts the rest of Eagan that I represent. I first came to be part of this project actually when I was sitting on a citizen advisory commission, the City Parks Commission, and we looked at a number of different plans over the years that would deal with this particular Cedar Grove redevelopment area. And as being part of that process, I got to be very close to how the citizens were engaged in this redevelopment process. And the plan that is before you all today is a plan that the citizens at Eagan have really gotten behind. And I think that's impressive in terms of a redevelopment of this size. When you think of a lot of people building a mall in your backyard, the first thing that pops into your mind isn't probably a lot of the citizens jumping up and saying, I can't wait for the mall to be in my backyard. Folks are really excited in Eagan in this particular area because it's being thoughtfully designed, and it's being designed in a way that's going to provide significant access for the residents along with the folks that are going to be coming in from other parts of the metro area to visit our community, this part of our community that's been kind of fading on the vine. And the residents are excited to have this revitalized, and I think that that's significant, and I was happy to be part of it. And it's because it's been done in a very planful way. There's open space that's been part of it, bringing in the surrounding businesses and employers that will be utilizing the area. has been part of that planning process, and as well as the residents who live there, folks that have been living there their whole lives. Some of these, this is one of the oldest parts of our district, one of the densest developed part of our district, and so folks that are aging in place, new senior housing that has gone in there, along with youth housing that has gone into that district. So it's serving a very diverse population of residents, and I'm hearing great feedback from people in, on that side of the district when I've been talking to them, as well as on my side of the district. So we've got good support in our district and ask for your support.
Very good. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify regarding House File 1905? Seeing none, Representative Mason, any closing words?
Again, I appreciate your consideration. This has been a long time. The city's been dealing with it. A lot of people have been, as Representative Garofalo has suggested, it's been very difficult on many of the business owners, on many of the residents in the city, and I think that this would definitely go a long way to help solidify the work that's going on, and I think the project is incredibly exciting. Again, I appreciate your consideration.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you very much. Representative Atkins, let's go from Egan to Egan, if we could, please. The chair will move House File 2886 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the division
chair
report.
Thank you for consideration on the previous one.
Ah, certainly, Mayor McGuire. Are you, you sticking around?
Back.
Catch and release. Okay. Representative Atkins, please begin.
And good afternoon, Mr. Chair. I want to start with a thank you. The fact that you were kind enough to put on both of Egan's bills on the same day, it does kind of make a difference to those people that don't work here every day like we do, for them to get a chance to be before you with the bills on the same day. This bill is very simple. It takes the 5-year period, extends it to 10 years. At the time this was originally certified as a TIF district, it was, what, about 15 minutes later that the economy went in the tank, and it just hasn't had an opportunity to grow fruit yet. So the request is for a 5-year extension. As you've already learned, and I won't belabor, I don't know that there's anybody that's more of a model for thoughtfulness in terms of how they approach the use of TIF. Egan doesn't do this in a willy-nilly fashion. They only do it when it's absolutely necessary, and many other communities look to see how they do business, and if they didn't absolutely need this, they wouldn't ask for it. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll turn it over to the mayor.
Thank you very much. Mayor McGuire, welcome back to the committee. Please again introduce yourself to the tape and proceed.
Chair, members, my name is Mike McGuire. I'm the mayor of the city of Egan. I appreciate your time and consideration on this more simple TIF consideration as well. I want to thank Representative Atkins. Representative Atkins does not represent a great majority of the city of Egan in space, but he certainly has always represented the precinct that he represents, where this project is, ably, and I found him to be also very consistent with the values and attitudes of folks in my district. So I'm glad he doesn't move to Egan.
I represent a lot of pop bottles and stuff, Mr. Chairman. I mean, there's lots and lots of warehouse space, and all of those pop bottle folks, they think I do a fine job.
That's right.
Excellent. So. Good.
So if I
let
can.
Me write that down, Representative Atkins. Mayor McGuire.
Just a little bit of context. This is a redevelopment district that is in the northeastern part of our city. It is in an area of the city that is under the Mendota corridor in terms of the flight paths from the MAC. And so our land use in the area dictates that we try to not to do residential in these areas and do primarily commercial and industrial development. So in this redevelopment area, it was a residential area that were, quite frankly, the homes were just, they were losing value, quite frankly, because of the high level of airport noise. They were out in an area, they were homesteaded well before comprehensive guiding and zoning and that kind of thing. So as residential use has failed in the area, we redeveloped the TIF district with an office model in mind. Our developer there is McGuff. They are waiting for a large office user to come in and want to build office on the property and to work with them to build office on the property. In this recession, that's a challenging prospect. There is a significant amount of office available, not just in Egan, but in the metro area. So the property hasn't been able to redevelop as we've wanted to see it go. And without the extension on being able to invest here again, when a user who does want to use the site comes along, the City of Egan's hands would be tied to participate in and invest in the redevelopment effort and try to revitalize the property and return the tax base.
All right. Questions from members regarding House File 2886? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify regarding House File 2886? Representative Atkins.
Can we just put it on the consent calendar? Do we still have a consent calendar? I mean, it's just...
Representative Mahoney, do we still have a consent calendar?
No, but I just, with an attorney of the skill of Mr. Representative Atkins at the table, I was just wondering if he, you know, in his comments, he talked about willy-nilly localities that just willy-nilly use tax increment finance, and I was wondering if he'd like to comment any further upon that.
Representative Atkins?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, no.
He's got his back to the audience, Representative Mahoney.
Representative Mahoney, I would concur.
Very good. All right. Last comments, or are we done?
I don't want to mess this up.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Chair. Thank you all for coming. Mr. Pepper, thank you for your contributions today.
Thanks for your consideration.
Representative Marcourt. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you.
Please,
Mr. Chair.
Would you like to move your bill?
I will move House File 2632.
Thank you very much.
Members, what this is, back in 2006, Detroit Lakes was given the authority to establish a tax increment redevelopment district. That was to expire December 31st of 2014. It's a five-acre chunk of land, and I'm passing out the map right now. Talking to Larry Remen, City of Detroit Lakes Community Development Director, they would like to extend that deadline two more years to December 31st, 2016. The two main reasons, and one has been mentioned several times, was the recession that hit in 09 and 10 and so forth. That put things behind. But the second thing was, as you can see from the map, in that project area, MnDOT was doing a realignment of Highway 10. That did not get completed till 2010. So according to Mr. Remen, about half of the 5 acres has been developed, about $3 million of new development, and they would respectfully ask for two more years on the extension.
All right. Is there any questions from committee members regarding House File 2632? Is there anyone in the audience wishing to testify regarding House File 2632? Any closing comments, Representative Marcourt?
I do not. Just thank you so much. They're very appreciative of the TIF district that is there right now. So thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
We have one last bill on the agenda today, and we're just waiting for Representative Fabian to become available. I know. I thought he was going to stick around. He didn't. He missed the good part.
I'll move 2739 for possible inclusion.
Thought he was going to stick around. He didn't. He missed the good part.
I'll move 2739 for possible inclusion in a later bill.
Representative Garofalo, thank you very much. Representative Garofalo moves 2739 for possible inclusion in the division report. I think we will wait for the author. And we didn't even have to wait long for the author.
Answer your phone, Dan.
I feel it vibrating right now. Thank you.
Well, that's all we need to know about that.
I apologize.
It's a phone.
Representative Fabian, Representative Garofalo has already moved this bill for you, so we're slightly ahead of the game.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Appreciate you putting us on your schedule today, and thanks Representative Garofalo for moving the bill for me. It's nice to have teammates and friends.
Chairman, you want to move the A1 amendment?
Yep. Oh, my apologies. Yes. Is that coming around? Or is it in a packet? Okay. Oh, sure enough. Okay. Representative Garofalo moves the H2739A1 amendment. Representative Fabian, is this an author's amendment to get the bill in the form you prefer?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it is.
All right. With that, any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Fabian, to your bill is amended, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members. I appreciate your indulgence. I apologize for being a little late. I had another committee obligation, obviously. What we're doing with this bill, if you've been to Northwest Minnesota and if you've had the pleasure to be up there, you know that we have a tremendous amount of industry, and we have a significant workforce housing shortage. We have several large manufacturers, Polaris, Marvin, Windows and Doors, Arctic Cat, DigiKey. They employ thousands of people between them. We also have other smaller industries, Central Boiler in Greenbush, Heatmore in War Road, and just a whole host of those up and down Highway 11 and our area. One of the things that's holding back expansion in our business community is the fact that we don't have enough workforce housing. So we have worked for 3 or 4 years to try to come up with some solutions to see if we can't address it and make more housing available. So in working with the League of Minnesota Cities and Todd Peterson and many other people from industry and civic leaders in Northwest Minnesota, this is the plan that we have come up with. And what we would like to do is be able to extend the authority to our local communities to be able to use a TIF so that they could create some sort of an avenue, put a tool in the toolbox to maybe help us alleviate some of our serious workforce shortages. The people in Northwest Minnesota, as you've heard me say many, many times before, are industrious, they're hardworking, and they're good, decent, hardworking, honest people. Not that all Minnesotans aren't, I'm not suggesting that. If you happen to see the article that was in the Finance and Commerce the other day, the last question that the interviewer asked me, he said, well, Representative Fabian, are you all concerned that your local authorities may use these TIFs to develop luxury apartments? And I paused for a moment. I said, well, have you ever been to Rosa or Greenbush? And he said, well, no, I haven't. And I said, well, I figured that. Because what we would consider to be luxury would probably be, you know, something substantially less than that. But I did close by saying, if we do build something that's considered to be luxurious in my part of the state, it's either a deer stand or a fish house. So, you know, what I'd like to do at this point, if I may, Mr. Chair, is for some of the technical aspects of the bill is turn that over to Todd Peterson, our city administrator from the city of Roseville, and have him do more of the technical explanations of what the bill entails, and we'd be happy to take questions.
Very good, Representative Fabian. Thank you. Mr. Peterson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Todd Peterson, Community Development Coordinator for the City of Roseville, and thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. What this change that we're looking to make to TIF law to the economic, and we're looking at the economic development side as opposed to the housing side, and the reason we're looking at this is because this is all directly related, as Representative Fabian said, geared towards business development. The need for workforce housing is a direct result of industry growing in our region and needing additional housing for employees that make basically above the wages that are within the current housing TIF. And so that's the reason we wanted to include it in economic development. And it's very targeted for our areas in rural Minnesota where market rate housing just doesn't get built. And specifically in Roseville, we have not had a market rate housing unit built in the last 10 years. And in my tenure in Roseville, which is 18 years, we've had a total of four market rate apartment units constructed in the community. So there's just nothing that's being built for that segment of population that would work at some of these industries where they're not paid, you know, outlandish wages, but they're not paid very poorly either. They fall in the middle between where housing TIFs work and where market rate can just take over. So what we're trying to address through this is to hit that spot where there's basically no help in order to get some more housing built. And so we've made this very targeted and very narrow to just provide some subsidy that we can give to developers to build this housing. Because right now, in a small town like Roseau, there's just way too much risk, not enough profit motive to ever get any housing built. And with this subsidy, at least this gives the city a tool to provide to developers to give them some incentive, reduce some of the risk, and provide at least a little profit margin to be able to provide housing for these growing industries. Without this housing, these industries will have to look to expand elsewhere where they can get housing, because basically housing is vital infrastructure that they need in order to recruit new employees, to keep employees without having them leave. I guess I'd be open to questions regarding some other things, but what we're looking for is just to expand the economic development TIF to allow workforce housing for small communities, 9 years for in general, but also 25 years for areas like Roseau that haven't seen any housing built within the last 10 years that would give them even a more incentive.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also, we do have some other testifiers here who would be willing to help answer questions. Patrick Hines from the League of Minnesota Cities. We have a representative of Polaris Industries. If there's questions for them, I'd like to have them at least come forward so they could be ready in case we need them rather than take
certainly. Let's start with any questions from members. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much. And I was, Mr. Chair, I was just wondering on, would be Section 3 where it says work. Workforce housing findings, and that lists a number of criteria. Do we have a list of what cities or counties would qualify under this that would meet those criteria? There's four or five criteria that would have to be met. Is there a list of today what those cities would be?
Thank you very much, Representative Marquardt. Ms. Hines, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, Patrick Hines with the League of Minnesota Cities. Representative Marquardt, you were referring to the criteria that are on page 4, I believe, the unemployment rate, the percentage of adults,
yes,
et cetera.
That's correct.
Based on what we have looked at, and I should say that this data can be obtained from the Census Bureau, the American Community Surveys, and the data can be determined from the website. We've determined that approximately 18 counties in the state would meet this criteria. I say approximately because I've had a couple of differing opinions about exactly where the numbers fall, but it would be fewer than 20 that this would apply to. And to that point, I should say that was one of the goals when we put together this legislation, is that really trying to strike the proper balance between creating a tool that can work for cities like Roseau or Jackson or Worthington, while balancing the concerns that that the legislature has traditionally had about using TIF for market rate housing. And so we've come at it at this by making it very targeted so that communities in the metropolitan area, communities that don't have a workforce housing problem, aren't going to be able to use this tool to develop a subdivision that could go up anyway. So that's why we have the criteria, and that's why relatively few counties would benefit from it.
Representative Marquardt?
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Do you happen to have a list of those counties? Maybe it's in the materials here and I'm missing it.
But. Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, it's not in the materials. I apologize. I can read what we have if you want it. I can get it to members, certainly.
If you'd follow up with members.
That would be fine, if you'd follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Erickson, did you...
No, I just wanted to know if my comments were part of it. No,
but I think Representative Fabian will pass it along. Representative Loeffler.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just say that there's a workforce housing shortage throughout the entire state of Minnesota, and I think that if you look at even in the metro area, and we heard about some of the from the testimony earlier, that a lot of the housing development has been luxury or higher in income,
the standard that here that you have to have a, that there's a shortage if you have a vacancy rate of 5% or less. If you actually read the paper, they say that cities should target a 5% vacancy rate, that that actually creates a healthy synergy and gives people who want to rent or need to rent a certain amount of choice. And so, you know, I think there's an issue with workforce housing that's a pretty complicated thing, and I'm not sure if changing an economic development tool to apply to housing is the best solution. But the targeting here seems to be a little bit much narrower than at least the problem as you've defined it.
Mr. Hines.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Loeffler. You're right, it is a very complicated issue, and it is difficult to define what workforce housing is, let alone to define what the problem is as it varies from Roseau to Jackson to even Minneapolis. And the vacancy rate you referenced is at 5%. It's not a magic number. I know there are communities like Duluth, for instance, that who has a vacancy rate of, I believe, 1.5% or so. So in trying to target this, we certainly can change the numbers in order to get at the problem that we're trying to solve. I think to your point about there being issues in Minneapolis or the metro area, I think that's true. But what this issue is really targeted at communities that can't develop market rate housing because there aren't enough developers who are willing to take on the additional risk and put up the additional money to build market rate houses in Roseau. We a community that is dependent on three or four businesses to for all of their jobs. This is simply more risk. Banks are not willing to loan as much money in those communities because of that risk. And there are a number of factors, I think, that are unique to these areas. So it's not to say that there's no workforce housing problem in the metro or in Minneapolis, but that this particular workforce problem we think could be addressed with this tool.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just also think the availability and the reliability of the data that you've cited is going to be an issue as well, because even in the metro area, we have very difficult times getting good, accurate vacancy data. Because it tends to come from companies that make a living by gathering data from large, more higher rate rental housing providers. They don't scan the whole market. The Census Bureau is also very limited in its ability to get good information about smaller levels of government. And so I just think, I think there's an issue. I think you've identified an issue. I'm not sure that an economic development TIF is the right route because it really does enlarge the whole intention of the economic development TIF.
Mr. Hines?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loeffler, I understand where you're coming from, and I think we were faced with the question. We want to do something to help workforce housing, and I know the legislature identified that as an issue last year, and they set aside $10 million of the Housing Challenge Program money to be used for communities similarly situated. And we wanted to use a TIF option because it's a local option. Each community that qualifies can decide whether or not it's right for them. And it also doesn't require any general fund money from the state. So that if we're going to use TIF, then the question becomes, to try to expand a housing TIF district, which has been traditionally used for affordable housing, or do you try to expand an economic development district, which has been used for economic development? And our feeling is, if a company like Polaris or AAR wanted to expand, most people would be very excited to use TIF to help them expand a factory floor. And we would have press conferences and say, this is a great thing. We're having high-paying jobs, and it would be good. They've already done that expansion. And what they need is to get people into those jobs. And I know, and Mr. Eng from Duluth can discuss it more, but AAR hired 100 people in Duluth recently, and 50 of them are living in hotels right now because they simply don't have a place to live. So we made a choice to use an economic development district in order to try to keep the focus narrow and not to take away any resources that might be used for affordable housing.
For members in the audience, we're now 5 minutes over, and I believe this room is going to be used again at 5:45. So as I stated at the beginning of the hearing, I want everybody to have a chance to tell their story, but we're now running out of time. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers, here is kind of my concern here. You're talking $15 and $18 an hour jobs. I could ask a lot more questions in economic development. You know, I have a member at the table there that tends to do that. I won't. I think maybe your market rate housing problem would go away if the wages, if there was less of an incoming inequality gap in this world, but I'll just leave it at that as not a question. But maybe you might not have a housing problem, you might have a wage problem.
Mr. Eng, you came a distance today. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Chris Eng. I'm the Director of Business and Economic Development for the City of Duluth, and I appreciate the opportunity to come tonight. I'll keep my comments brief. In support of House Bill 2739, I'm pleased to say that Duluth's economy is on the move. We have right now unemployment rates of about 4.6%, which is as low as it's been since 2007. Between 2012 and 2013, we've added 1,500 new jobs in the city of Duluth alone, not including Northeast Minnesota, not including Superior. Right now, at the present time, we have companies that are hiring, including AAR. It's the company that took over the old Northwest Airline Maintenance Base, and they have 300 employees there that last year was sitting empty. And they would hire another 100 right now if they could find the talent. And they're recruiting very, very heavily. We've got companies like Enbridge that is adding 100 employees. Cirrus is growing again after the economy had a serious downswing in their growth and their projected sales as well. So 1,000 vacancies right now, and we're working with these companies to recruit professional talent into the city of Duluth. And it's a good problem to have. But the problem that we're having now is that we do recruit people, and we are working hard to recruit talent. There is nowhere to live in Duluth. And as Mr. Haynes mentioned earlier, AAR hired 50 new people that are now staying in hotels. So it's good for the economy for Duluth hotels, but it's hard to bring a family to the city of Duluth when you're living in a hotel. And so it is an ongoing challenge for us. We've just recently completed a market study that shows that by the year 2020, we need 2,300 new housing units in the city of Duluth. We have land. There are two vacant schools that are sitting empty that we could redevelop. They don't qualify for redevelopment TIF. They don't meet the needs of the businesses that are hiring, including AAR, that's hiring at $60,000 a year. And Enbridge is hiring at $85,000 a year. And Maurice's, we have about $200 million in new construction programs right now, this summer, starting in Duluth. And we're going to be running out of places for the contractors to live that are building these new commercial units, and mostly in a vast majority of them in our downtown. So I would really encourage you to please support this or help us find a way to address this shortage of workforce housing in the city of Duluth. It's a real challenge for us. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir, you've come to the table. Please identify yourself for the table.
You,
proceed briefly.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Jonathan Bone representing Polaris Industries in support of House File 2739. Polaris is the global market leader in side-by-side vehicles, the largest domestic manufacturer of ATVs, the world's pioneer in snowmobile manufacturing, and a proud Minnesota-headquartered company, having its largest manufacturing facility located in the northwest corner of the state for nearly 60 years. Polaris has been a dynamic, growth-minded company and great manufacturing success story. Like other manufacturers located in rural communities, it faces the difficulties of growing jobs when housing is in short supply. As Polaris has sought to expand its workforce in Roseau in recent years, it has encountered an acute shortage in workforce housing. For example, one employee relocating from Green Bay to take a human resources position transitioned his young family between hotel rooms, shared with another employee's family for several weeks, and then went from rental unit to rental unit until finally finding a permanent option. The company also experiences significant employee retention costs and disruptions when hourly line workers outside the area relocate and leave after a few weeks at rates above 50% due to the inadequacy of permanent housing options. If this bill had been in effect years ago, the concerns in housing would be more easily resolved as companies like Polaris grow out of the most recent recession. While this bill may benefit economic development in Roseau in the future, more importantly, it will benefit the vitality of rural communities throughout our state. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, sir. Representative Fabian, I'll give you 2 minutes, and you can divide it up as you wish between Mr. Halbach and yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. This is just a very, very pressing problem in our part of the state in rural Minnesota, and I appreciate the concerns that Representative Mahoney expresses. We are constantly competing with a neighbor to the west, Grand Forks. We've seen DigiKey and Thief River Falls start expanding into Fargo, North Dakota. We've seen jobs shifted away from manufacturing facilities in northwest Minnesota, and we realize that this is not just one thing that's going to solve the issue. But we have to give our responsible, locally elected officials some tools to be able to deal with this. I've been in the legislature for 3.5 short years. I have sat in housing meetings with the commissioner. The governor has been to town. We've talked and we've talked and we've talked. And quite frankly, folks, the vast majority of the programs just do not work for rural Minnesota. So I'm asking you to give this tool to our locally elected officials.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Halbach?
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Welcome to the committee.
Chip Halbach, Director of Minnesota Housing Partnership. I'm here today in support of this bill, and I should say that our organization works primarily in Greater Minnesota, supporting the workforce needs and affordable housing needs in Greater Minnesota. We've worked with over 300 communities and nonprofits trying also doing that work. We believe and have seen through our market studies that what has been said here today really is at least 20 other Greater Minnesota communities are facing that urgent need for housing for their expanding workforce. We believe that this is an important step to help meet that need. I'm also part of a task force with Minnesota Housing, Greater Minnesota Housing Fund, and other developers trying to come up with ways of addressing this need. TIF alone won't do it, but it will help us get there. We think with the TIF bill and also an approach that we have brought up with some of you about the housing district opening up with the same income limits for rental and ownership, that could address some of the metropolitan needs, but this bill is urgently needed, so we appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Halbach. With that, members, we stand adjourned.